journey to a hill called Golgotha. And in today's gospel lesson, as we draw near to the cross, we will discover that we find strength in our garden experiences when we anchor our prayers in the will of the Father. Let me pray. Father God, I submit to you these moments, that they would honor you and your word given to us, that they would speak to us in the way that you would have us. And this I pray. Amen. Well, when I say the word garden, what image comes to mind? Shout it out.
Carrots.
Carrots, okay. What?
Flowers.
What was?
Tomatoes.
Okay. Keep going. Weeds, yeah. Yeah, lots of them.
Milkweed.
Milkweed, yep. I always think, somebody mentioned this morning, deer don't like daffodils, but boy, they like gardens, don't they? And any other words come to mind?
Butterflies.
Butterflies, yeah. All of those springs. What'd you, what was the other one? Bees? Yep, have to have those. Well, there are many types of gardens, as we know. There are vegetable gardens, flower gardens, organic gardens, horticulture gardens, perennial gardens, and annual gardens. There are public gardens, secret gardens, sun gardens, and shade gardens. Gardens that lead to somewhere and gardens that lead nowhere. There are Japanese gardens, English gardens, French and Italian gardens. There are gardens in backyards, on rooftops, in schools, in hospitals, and there are city gardens and country gardens. And I'm guessing we have a garden here in Ortonville, is that right? I think somewhere I remember reading that. There are gardens that make us laugh and make us smile. Gardens where memories are made and gardens that help us to remember. Well, you kind of get the picture, I hope. Gardens often remind us of familiar places, past experiences, both pleasant and at times unpleasant. I remember when I was, that's my favorite picture on Facebook. It comes out right now. Yeah. And so if you could jump ahead one screen, I think that's where we need to be, Linda, would be perfect. When I was a young boy, I used to pick raspberries with my dad. And this was, by the way, the last time I ever picked raspberries. As I parted the bush to get some of the bigger raspberries and reached in to grab, and that's what I came across. I'm guessing that's why spiders and I don't get along real well these days. And so some of those garden experiences are unpleasant in many different ways. Gardens for us can become healing. They can offer a sense of hope or renewed strength while giving us a place to recall difficult events in our life. Or they can become for us an anchor of our faith story. Maybe a certain place where we have heard the voice of God, marking turning points in our life and leading us toward his will. Maybe for you it isn't a garden at all, but maybe it's another place where earth and heaven intersect, where the voice of God is apparent as the wind blows. What garden image comes to mind when you think of that? Well, I'm guessing that all of us have a garden story of some kind, the place where the testing of our faith and life finds its anchor. And so in today's lesson, Jesus teaches us that we seek God's will in suffering by anchoring our life in prayer. Prayer and pain. As we look at this text and as Steve read it to us, there's two predominant, clear themes in here. Prayer and pain. Two words that are evident. And Jesus experienced them both as he came to the garden this day. In verse 32, it says that they went to a place called Gethsemane. The disciples and Jesus had just begun enjoying the fruits of the Passover feast, the celebration that they came to annually in Jerusalem. And we may know, but the main course for that feast is the lamb, and so it had been prepared, and a room was gathered or found by the disciples. And they were sharing a meal, and this was to be the highlight of the feast. But this would be their last supper with Jesus. As he had told them a few times before that his hour was near, He would point to his accuser here in this meal, his own, and he would tell his most faithful disciple that he would fail him. And so after this time together in the upper room, the disciples and Jesus would retreat to the outskirts of Jerusalem, to a garden called Gethsemane, a location the disciples knew very well along with Jesus. Because whenever they were in the vicinity of Jerusalem, Luke tells us that they would go to this place. In 21:37, it says, each day Jesus was teaching at the temple, and each evening he went out to spend the night on the hill called the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives, Gethsemane. This is where the garden stood. It consists of a ridge with three crests about 2 miles long across the Kidron Valley from Jerusalem. Its highest point is about 2,700 feet, and it stands over about 200 feet taller than the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. It is about 4,000 feet above the Dead Sea to the west, and so it gives it quite a dramatic view when one is to look upon it. And it would not surprise us then that Jesus found this place his go-to place. And two, it could remind us of maybe our go-to place. Well, this type of garden was an olive garden, and Hebrew, in Gethsemane in Hebrew, means oil press, probably because there were oil presses that were kept in this vicinity. And then also, this is where the olives were pressed. And in the days of Moses, if we look back, oil was pressed from the olives, and it was used to keep lamps lit, especially around the tent of the meeting, the place where God dwelled and where the Ark of the Covenant would reside. The light was important, that it was sustained all night, and the oil would do this. And this would become a lasting ordinance for among the Israelites for generations to come. But to get the oil, the olives had to be hard-pressed. They had to be crushed as every ounce of life was squeezed out of them for a greater good. Well, tonight, this place would become for Jesus his garden story. You see, he would find himself treading closer than ever before to the plight of human suffering. Jesus, the Son of God, would come to know our deepest pain. Prophet Isaiah, as we heard in the beginning, shares of this to come, that he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed and broken for our iniquities. The garden filled 3 years of memories. It had become a sanctuary, a place of prayer, where Jesus would even express his deepest struggles as he did this night. I heard the story of a beautiful day, and a family had anchored their boat in a cove on Catalina Island off of California when the strong Santa Ana winds started to blow. And they realized that they were in a precarious position. The winds were coming from the mainland, and there was no safe harbor on the mainland facing that side of Catalina. And if they pulled their anchor, then it would have meant going back around the islands out into the open sea for a bit in the midst of the high winds and the waves. And so as the sun began to set that evening, they decided to pray and to keep careful watch during the night to see if they had set their anchor well. If it hadn't held, they would have been blown out to sea or to the shore and the rocks. It was a terrifying experience, the father explains, especially since they had three young sons with them. When daylight finally broke, they realized that they were safe. But a boat next to us, he said, had lost its anchor and was smashed upon the rocks. They had a fearful night, he says, but they were thankful that their anchor was set well and it held. The garden, a place of pain and prayer, would become the anchor of his faithful journey as he prepared to bear the sins of the world for all of humanity. Now, in Christian tradition, Gethsemane has come to represent Jesus' lowest moment in his earthly life, where he asked for the cup of suffering to be removed, questioning even his own purpose. And as it was a lesson on a hill for Jesus, the place of pain and prayer, it is also a lesson for us. And I think that there are three things that I discovered that we can learn from this garden experience. And let me share them with you. Number one is that pain is very personal, which I'm assuming you know already. Pain was personal for Jesus. First, because he asked his closest friends to stick by him. As Jesus instructed the other disciples to stay back a bit and sit and wait, sit here and pray while I go and pray. He turns to the three inner circle, Peter, James, and John, and takes them with him for a bit. Why? You know, if you've ever experienced deep pain or hurt in your life, you know what it's like to have someone close to you to walk beside you. Someone who can listen and sit with you and hug you and offer you a comforting word or two. So we like to have those people around us in the midst of struggle. But just the opposite or the contrast, I'm sure there are times that in the midst of pain, there are people that we really don't want around us. Possibly. Or maybe because these were Jesus' close friends, whom he held in great trust. Great trust. These are the ones, remember, he took them to the high mountain. These were the ones when he went to heal Jairus' daughter, and he took Peter, James, and John. Peter, James, and John, who Mark tells us he had private conversations about the end of times here on this mountain. You see, the pain was personal for Jesus because it mattered who was near him. Second, we understand this pain is personal for Jesus because of the depth and the intensity of his grief. We know it by Mark's narrative. That's why I chose it for this week, because his wording is a little more intense than the other Gospels, as he says that Jesus became deeply troubled and distressed. And then in his own words, he says, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death." Crushed. As the olive is so that it can give light, Jesus would also be crushed to the point of death, so to give light to the soul of sinners, as Isaiah tells us. You see, this was personal for Jesus, and this was so excruciating that we learn as he was going a bit further, he even turns to his three closest friends and says, "Stay here." And then he falls to the ground to speak to God. The psalmist writes of this deep pain in Psalm 6:3, "My soul is in deep anguish. How long, O Lord, how long?" This is personal because of the depth of love of God had for humanity and for its brokenness. Paul writes in Ephesians 3:17 that he wants them to grasp the depth of Jesus' love. And he says, "I pray that you will have the power to understand, to grasp how wide and how long and how high and how deep is the love of Christ." So pain is personal. Third, we understand as pain is personal for Jesus because of an expressed relationship to his Father in this text. You see, the garden experience has come to be viewed as a most passionate, intense, and deepest personal moment with God, revealing the very heart of the relationship between Son and Father. This complete form of surrender is expressed in his calling out to God, "Abba, Father." One commentary says it this way: we could say that Jesus came to the garden to wrestle one-on-one with his Father. Personal pain. We know it. We've experienced it. We've seen it in a weeping child over a broken relationship. Maybe we've experienced it in the loss of a loved one or a child or a spouse. Maybe we've experienced it in our marital relationships. Personal pain. Abraham knew of personal pain when he was tested and he was sent to sacrifice his son. Genesis says this, that he said to his servant, "Stay here with the donkey." Sound familiar? "Stay here with the donkey while I go over there and we will worship Now, I don't know I know what Abraham was going to face. I have a feeling that it wasn't all worship he did there. I got a feeling that maybe he wrestled with God, because God told him to go sacrifice his son. Jacob knew also personal pain. Jacob, because of his poor choices, past mistakes, pride, he wrestled with the angel, if we recall in Genesis 32, so he could receive blessing. Personal and painful. Enough for Jesus, knowing too that he was soon to experience a most gruesome death, not even good enough for the worst criminal. His personal deep pain expressed to the Father. And so he falls to the ground. And he prays that if it were possible, that it would be removed. Personal enough to wrestle with God. So what does it mean to wrestle with God in the midst of pain? To question? To doubt? Sure. To say why? To ask questions? And even for a time, to be mad. Maybe this is the lesson for us, that Jesus even wrestled with God for our sakes, so that we would know it was him we needed to go to in our times of deepest personal struggle, because prayer is personal. And then number two, we learn that prayer eases pain. You probably know this from your life. Prayer becomes the way to experience the pain of suffering without yielding to its will and defeat. Prayer helps us to fully submit to God's will on every occasion, trusting that in He has a greater purpose. For Jesus, the Son, this was an expression of obedient surrender and complete faith in the Father. The garden would become a sanctuary of transference as Jesus would exchange his grief for God's words of comfort and peace. A sanctuary of transference. That is the garden. He prayed that if it were possible, you know why? Because he knew it was possible for God to bring healing in this anguish. In verse 36, he says, Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. So for Jesus, we can say the prayer eased his pain by submitting to God's will. Why? Because he knew the present suffering would lead to future glory. Paul speaks to this future glory in Romans 8:18. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed. He says, we know the whole of creation has been groaning, yet we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. You might be familiar with that passage. So how do we know that prayer eases pain? Because Jesus instructed his disciples to do the same. Watch and pray. In Luke's account, he says to them a second time after finding them asleep, probably snoring, he says, get up and pray. Pray. He taught us how to pray. Because prayer eases pain. And it leads us, as we say each week, not into temptation, but deliver us from pain. Prayer eases pain. And thirdly, we learn that God's will needs to be the anchor to our prayers. Yet not what I will, but what you will. Probably Jesus' most powerful statement, showing Peter, James, and John his complete submission to the will of God, a faithful trust in the one who sent him. And this is how I believe he found his way to Mount Calvary, because God's will was the anchor of his prayer. Not my will, but yours. We sing about it. You know the song, I surrender all to Jesus. We know those words. Or trust and obey, for there's no other, right? But what if we faithfully prayed it and lived it and completely surrendered our lives to God's will because we trust him? It reminded me of a story of many years ago. We had steps going up in our house, and they were a lot taller than this, but my daughter would like to, you know, go up a couple steps, and she would go up a couple, and then I would stand here with my arms wide open, and she would jump into my arms. You know, if you're a parent, a dad, maybe you've done that, or a mom, and so she would do this. She loved to do it, and she would challenge me a little bit, and she would move up a step each time, and this would go up to our second story in the house, and So it was up a little ways. And she says, and at one moment she says, "Dad, I'm going all the way up." And so there she stood at the top, and she says, "Dad, catch me." And I waited, hesitantly. She said, "I trust you, Daddy. That you won't let me fall." And I didn't. Jesus' journey took complete surrender to the will of God. Maybe that is why this garden story seems to be one of the most difficult parts of his journey. Yet it was also preparing him for one of the greatest moments in the world. You see, we all have a garden story, and some are rockier than others. And this is my rocks, by the way. If you haven't never been to Stonehenge, that's what that is. But some are rockier than others. But sometimes they bring us joy and laughter. And other times there is much pain. And it brings us to the knees of our Father. Because pain is personal. And there are times we need to wrestle with God. But we know that prayer eases pain. So we ask for God's healing. And we should. We ask for his recovery. We ask for his mercy. But what if we changed our prayers and prayed like Jesus, and God's will became the anchor of each prayer? What if we found ourselves safe and secure because we faithfully trusted in God's will for our lives? God's will for you and me, that Jesus experienced his painful garden. Why? Despised and rejected by mankind, he became a man of suffering and familiar with pain, Isaiah tells us. And he prayed that God's will would be done. Jesus knows our pain because pain for Jesus was personal, and because he knows that prayer eases pain. So our Lenten challenge for this week or this season is to find ourselves more intensely anchored in our prayers to God. And maybe we close each prayer with "not my will, but yours."